Whether it's financial security, a free vacation home, time for traveling, more quality time with the family, or even early retirement, whatever you choose to do with the income and benefits that come with successfully investing in short-term rentals, you know that it's certainly life-changing. This podcast will help guide and support you on your journey to five-star STR success.
First and foremost, thank you guys all for being here. I wanted to say we appreciate you here at Five Star STR Success Short-Term Rentals Investors Group. You guys are awesome. Greatly appreciate all of you. It's Thanksgiving, and I wanted to come back here to talk to you guys about how to grow in this new economy that we're heading into. This new economy is different, and we all know that short-term rental investors have been making money for multiple years, but can you still make money in the near future? The thing is let these experts convince you whether you can or you can't. We've got Jonathan Mack here. Him and his wife are new investors. They just bought their first home in Florida. They're setting it up, and they've got a lot of questions for some of the experts here. Robert Norndorf, I'm butchering your name, Robert. We'll just say Robert. We got Rich Monroe, and we got Eric Carrico coming back on here. So look, guys, I'm going to let everybody go in and say who they are, where they're from, what they do in the STR industry, and we'll just start around Robin, and then we'll let Jonathan and Jessica take over at that point. And pardon me, I've been on the phone all day, and I've been traveling all day, so my voice is a little out, but guys, thank you guys so much. Here we go. We're going to start this right now. So, Rich, why don't you come on and tell everybody who you are, where you live, what you do in the STR world?
Yeah, absolutely, Brandon. Thanks for having me today. Always great to participate in your events. Big fan, been watching over the years as you've grown and expanded your base. So, thanks for having me on. And so, Rich Monroe, I'm based here in actually in Buford, Georgia, which is just 40 minutes or so northeast of Atlanta. My wife and I have a short-term rental business that we've focused, core focus for the last 8 years. And so we have about 72 properties right now, mostly in the state of Georgia, within city limits of Atlanta. And then we've about 2 years ago expanded down to the Tampa, Florida market. And so we have mostly single family homes down there, 4 and 5 bedroom homes. And we do a combination. So we have properties that we acquire. We have a rehab business, and we used to do a lot of rehabs. I've kind of slowed that business down because it's just a lot of work. So the only time we do rehabs now is if we're going to turn it into a short-term rental. And so we also have properties that we manage for other investors. And then we also do the rental arbitrage model or master leases. And so, you know, excited to chat today about what's going on in the space. I'm very active in regulatory kind of battles. We're right now with a fight with the city of Atlanta. Just recently today, actually, they publicly announced that they will be delaying the enforcement period for Atlanta yet again until March of 2023. And this is directly impacted by a group that we formed called AMSTRA, a nonprofit, which is an Atlanta Metro Short-Term Rental Alliance, to basically have a seat at the table. We have to end up threatening a lawsuit. I can give you more details on this if you're interested, but you know, very, very active on regulatory stuff in the state of Georgia and Florida as well. So happy to be on today.
Thank you. Robert, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody who you are, where you're from, where you live, what you do.
Certainly, guys, and I apologize, I'm traveling. So, you know, our company is a hosting and hospitality. We're much like a property manager, but we can't call ourselves one because we're not real estate licensed in the state of Texas. I started about 8 years ago. We had at one point a peak about 150. We're trimming down now because we're understanding we like dealing more with investors than with just the small mom and pops. We have right now floating about 100 listings throughout Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, Fairfield Bay, Arkansas, and then Playa del Carmen, Mexico. Some people have seen, you know, the internationals, the new landscape. We own, operate, arbitrage, and co-host. And co-hosting for us, we consider is, you know, helping other owners with their properties, either small stuff, just digital landscaping, you know, in the marketing and advertising, the listing creation, everything is that, all the way down to even managing full turn, even the cleaners, as well as the maintenance and all the other aspect. So we're tech heavy driven. We're excited. We're onboarding new PMS and becoming partners with Marriott. So we're excited for the industry. We don't see doom and gloom. We like a capital class A asset with bond-like volatility and equity-like returns. Brandon, I think you know that. So yep. We're excited. Anybody who's heavy in real estate, especially over the years, notices that right now we're about to come on the precipice, in my opinion, what's the best opportunity time. So it's all about the deal. It's not about the interest rate or the purchase price. It's how it all works out in the end in the deal.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, Eric, tell everybody who you are, what you do, and where you live currently, and just introduce yourself.
Okay, thanks, Brandon. Appreciate you guys having me on here today. Good to see everyone. I think I've met a few of you all. So my background is I was professionally trained as a civil and environmental engineer. Worked for about 20 years doing that. Through that experience, I kind of gained knowledge into project management, identifying development pieces, trying to find undervalued assets, redeveloping them. So pretty much I started doing that on the side, just buying real estate. So we started out with long-term rentals. Mostly, you know, we began in 2014 down in Florida. 2011 down in Florida. After that, we moved to Louisville, Kentucky, where I am now. And at one point, we were up to 16 short-term rentals. Scaled that back to 4, sold off a bunch, and we bought a small boutique hotel that we're currently renovating. It's a historical building, so we're getting the federal state historic tax credits on it. And it's in located in downtown Versailles, Kentucky, which is right next to Keeneland, which is also the horse capital of the world. It's a bourbon and horse-themed hotel, much like my Airbnbs. So I like bourbon and horses, and that's pretty much my deal.
Awesome, awesome. All right, guys. So look, I want to introduce Jonathan Mack. He's going to be partner. I believe he's going to be partner with his wife. I'm not sure, but we got Jonathan and Justin Mack. If not, it's just Jonathan. But Jonathan is a student of mine. He is somebody that I've been working with hand in hand in my mastermind, and he's bought his first short term rental. He's looking to get answers. He's like a lot of you guys, some of you that are trying to get involved in this industry, who's asking a lot of questions right now. So that's what we're all about here. That's what we're trying to do, is accomplish, help you accomplish what you feel like you may not be able to accomplish through knowledge and experience. And that's what this panel is all about. We're going to give you our opinions of the industry currently and what the industry will look like in the near future. So I'm going to let Jonathan and Jessica introduce themselves, and we will take it from there.
Thanks, Brandon. So Jessica and I are currently in our first STR here. As you can tell, we don't have any furniture yet. We're still in process of doing that. We've got basically internet and our iPad on here, but happy to moderate, and great panel discussion tonight. You know, from agenda perspective, we've got about 45 minutes for some kind of pre-canned questions we're going to go through in a panel discussion. We're going to start with kind of some of the more high-end or macro economy, and then move down to STR specific questions, and then we'll have about 20 minutes at the end for comments and Q&A. So yep. Thanks for the opportunity, Brandon, and we'll go ahead, and then Jessica.
Hello.
We have two sets of AirPods here because of the audio in this place. I guess the first question just to ask to the panel is, you know, why do you specifically like short-term rentals? Why not long-term or in any other kind of investments, right? You could invest in a lot of different things. Why short-term rentals? And whoever wants to take that first.
I can take it. Actually, I saw Rich about to talk. Why don't you go ahead and say something, Rich?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the main reason, you know, that my wife and I pivoted over to short-term rentals. We used to do long-term rentals. We actually had a tax lien business where we acquired a lot of properties in Georgia and in Maryland. And, you know, as a real estate investor, you're told, okay, well, you need to have some passive income, you need to build up your traditional rental portfolio, and you're told you're doing great if you can kind of net, you know, in that $400 to $500 per unit. We very quickly found out, you know, that as you have tenants that you have to evict, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times before the holidays, you know, so you got to get people out of the house and then you got to rehab it again. And so you do the math for, you know, that prior 12 months and it you're barely breaking even based on, you know, trying to accomplish a net number. And so we looked at the short-term rental model. And for me, it was kind of a light bulb moment because not only did the property stay in much better shape because you have them being professionally cleaned and inspected in between each guest stay, but, you know, you also have potentially 2 to 3 times the revenue, and in some cases higher than that, depending on the size of the property. And so it was a no-brainer for us to kind of pivot, and anything that didn't really fit a good short-term rental model, we sold out of our portfolio. And we started growing our business strictly by short-term rental units from that point forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to add to that too. Some of you guys know my story because you guys have been following me in this Facebook group for a while, but I've been in real estate for 20 years. We had 100 long-term rentals. I was flipping like 150 homes a year. And honestly, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired of having to redo all the work over again after I sell a property. We ended up selling all of our 100 long-term rentals between 2015 to 2018, which I know I should have kept them until 2021 and sold them all for 2022. But with that said, I always had to reinvent the wheel, and I got tired. I was, you know, going from 20 years old to almost 40. Actually, it's funny. I had a couple of properties under my belt at some point, and then I had a lunch with Rich several years ago and met him out on his side of town. And he told me that he doesn't flip houses unless he makes at least $50,000 or more a year. And I was flipping a shit ton of houses then. And I realized that I didn't want to reinvent the wheel anymore. And I started looking at my short-term rentals, because the 2 or 3 that we already had at the time, and realized that that was more fun. If there was a way to start and scale this business to evolve into a full-time income, maybe that's somewhere where I should focus my time. And that's when I paired my flip and my rental business together and had a STR business that now we're still flipping. I can share that later, but through questions if they get asked. But yeah, it's more fun for me. I've got great assets in great cities, lifestyle assets like people preach about, and they make more money. And it's just a more happier experience and existence for myself.
I just want to add one other thing, if one of the other panelists want to touch on this topic. But I mean, I think when you take a step back as far as what the, you know, as Jonathan mentioned, the real estate options and the different angles, one of the great things about this space is you can do it anywhere in the world. You know, once you build your scalable model and you add units, you've got a process down that handles, you know, guest communications and messaging, and you have all that built, you can be anywhere in the world and do this business. And so I literally came back from Puerto Rico. I spoke at a short-term rental conference a little over a week ago and looked at the properties down in Puerto Rico that are definite options for us. I was in Trinidad and Tobago. My wife's from Trinidad, and so we are looking at properties in Tobago over the weekend. So once you've got this system built, you can basically, you know, it's a quality of life thing. You can start expanding your business in other parts of the world, essentially, and do the same thing.
Thanks. Yeah, those are good points. Well, you know, one of the questions I think a lot of people would have, especially those who haven't purchased an STR yet, is, you know, is now the right time to invest? And what are your thoughts on that? If you're acquiring your first STR.
I'll go. It's excellent time to invest if you can find deals. It's all in the deal. Deals are pretty tough for the last 2 years because of the free money. So a lot of money's been sitting on the sidelines. And if you're in that situation, I think late next year, if we do have what they really want to define as a downturn slash, you know, what's the word? God, I can't even think of it right now. A downturn in real estate, as long with downturn in employment, I think that will actually make a lot more deals show up if you're able to cash flow and have good enough assets to either get loans or have cash ready. So.
I think we lost your audio, Brandon.
Oh, okay. I'm over here talking.
I needed my headphones.
Saw the mouth move, but nothing come out. I thought it was me.
Okay, were you adding into that, Brandon?
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. I'm adding into that. I think Eric's right. I think if you find the deal and it cash flows and it makes sense to put the money up, it doesn't matter what interest rate you're paying and or what the economics of the world is staying. If you got a steep enough deal, you bought it right and it cash flows right using the systems that we've all learned and or are learning, then you can conquer the STR uncertainty from the economic uncertainty. I think at the end of the day, the recession is mustache for me. I don't really care. It's just you know, I saw so many people get, and we're not in the same recession as we were in 2008, but I saw so many people get wealthy in 2009 and 2010 because they were buying. So what the wealthy did way back then was, and I owned a brokerage back then. I started my first brokerage then. Well, we were working for these clients because we were selling bank listings. But what these wealthy people did was they had their money in cash. They had what they call dry powder, and they were buying in the recession. So call this the recession that we're in now. Maybe the bottom has hit by end of Q2, and then the Fed slowly decreases rates by start of Q3, just a little bit. I mean, nobody can time the market. I could be completely wrong on this, but say Q2 of 2023, I'm estimating that's probably the best time to get your best deals for the people that are over leveraged and or that got into the game at the height and they don't know how to manage their business and or they hate it. Because this is a tough business. We'll all hear that tonight, I'm sure. I think some people will fire sell, and I think you can get some really good assets if you're patiently aggressive.
I think this is going to be the time to buy already furnished and already, you know, operating assets from poor operators and just absolutely come in with a killing. There's enough data out there right now. You should be running these models 10 years out. And I mean, Brandon, you know, we fight the don't call it Airbnb, call it STR. I'm now even so much more to the mindset of don't call it STR, just call it serviced accommodations. Because I'll tell you what, in my opinion, I'd still rather just shut down a unit, take whatever the market rate is, say $2,000, you know, a month on a, you know, long-term rental, but take an extra $1,000 for just the furniture, you know, if the market isn't doing good. And then as the market shifts back, as long as it's a good asset, appreciating whatever, it plays well into your deck, then you turn right around and, you know, seasonality shifts, you know, you come right back in, you get a, you know, great booking short-term. There's a conference, there's a huge event, there's sports, arenas, whatever. And then, you know, you're shifting seasonality to more the midterm rentals is now the huge hot term, but it's like, we're just shifting. You got to, it's the, what we look at it as the gallon of milk at the gas station and the gallon of milk at the, you know, the, at the grocery store, you know, we're providing convenience. We're leveraging that by getting 2 to 3 times rental revenue. And the question is what is the market? Knowing the market, knowing how to shift. And hey, January, February for Texas is slow. So right now we're marketing to snowbirds. You know, we're getting ahead and we know the rates that we'd like to get. We know the rates that are the bottom line. So we're marketing and we're hitting them until we can close that out. And it's master manipulation of the calendar, knowing the market and selling a serviced accommodation, you know, that still is backed by a capital class A asset.
Thanks, Robert. And that kind of perfectly sets up the next question since you bring it up. Is, you know, where you see the STR, you know, whatever you want to call STR, Airbnb, OTA industry in the next 10 years, starting with you, Robert, and then if anyone else wants to add or even think differently. So where do we see the STR industry going in the next 10 years, starting with Robert, if you're still there?
Yes, sorry about that. So, I still, again, you know, I mean, it's the same thing as if we turned around and said, hey, guys, that's it. Let's just exit out of real estate. You know, I mean, real estate's been around for thousands of years. Everybody's going to need a place to live. And you know what, frankly, I think we get excited at the thought that, you know, with low interest rates, you know, they sell it. The common person can get closer to owning home ownership. But at the end of the day, I just still see everybody being pushed towards rentals. Look at what happened when everybody sold out of their houses. They rent and stayed at Airbnbs because they didn't want to buy. Because who buys a house after they just sold it at the peak of the market? No, they want to go buy low. So what are they doing? And many of our clients were, hey, we're just literally bouncing around city to city, state to state, staying in Airbnb. So short-term rental, I think, will always be around. Regulations may kind of limit it. That, of course, just becomes, I think, you know, more intelligent in knowing regulations, you know, knowing areas. I mean, people get excited about Texas because it's kind of the wild, wild west sometimes, but we're even seeing regulations. Dallas is underneath huge regulations right now. But it again, it's just as you buy a piece of real estate, if you play in the real estate game, it's looking at all of the indicators. You know, do you have a good, you know, accruing, you know, a place that's got good appreciation value? Do you have good regulations? You know, what does, and some people don't even look at it when they're doing short-term rents. If I'm buying this house, what are the long-term rents? Could I still profit? I have a client that they can't even profit long-term rent. So it's, again, it's all in the deal. But I think short-term rentals is around because people love that convenience. We get rich off of one-day stays. Most people won't go into them, but we get rich because people, you look at your market and the data, I think 25 to 33% of bookings are one days, you know? So I think it's always going to be here. It will get regulated into certain areas till the cities feel more comfortable. You know, we do heavy screening. We've got noise devices, cameras. So you show the city that you're doing, being responsible, you're renting responsible, you're a responsible operator. I think, you know, keeping that in mind, I don't think short-term rentals aren't going to go anywhere.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, I alluded to this earlier. I think the fact is you can do this anywhere in the world right now, and I don't see that diminishing overnight, right? So, you know, 10 years from now, I think, you know, we're still seeing a shift in a lot of the younger folks that are traveling, and they don't really care where they're going. They just want to be somewhere different. And the ability to work remotely and, you know, some of the changes that we've had in that space, you're still going to have conferences, you're still going to have travel, and you're still having the shit happens, right? People are always relocating to new areas. You're having local neighbors that have insurance damage that they're getting done on their primary property. They don't want to move the kids out of the neighborhood and out of the school district. So you're always going to have a lot of these things, divorces, you're going to have all these things that are always going to continue to happen and continue to grow the short-term rental industry over the next 10 years. I mean, before COVID, you know, they did a survey, 61% of the general public didn't know what Airbnb was, you know, and I think it's gotten a lot more awareness, obviously, since COVID with what's occurred and moving away from hotels. But I really think there's continued growth in the market in terms of, you know, what the outlook going forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think on my end, you know, this is an emerging asset class. In my opinion, it's been around for a few decades, but at the same time, with Airbnb starting in 2008, they disrupted the industry. And I still think we're still in the early stages of mass adoption, and we've been seeing that over the last couple of years, specifically because, like Eric alluded to earlier, the government was printing money, and now anybody and the brother and sister was getting a home. They made it easy to purchase property in different areas, and we've seen such a mass increase of mass adoption all over the U.S. But I don't see that going away anytime soon. I mean, yes, some municipalities will regulate and or prohibit and or maybe even ban short-term rentals, but at the same time, they're always going to be here because at the end of the day, guys. For what I'm seeing in my own businesses, people that are renting here are wanting memories and they want to feel like they're at home. They want to feel like they're in something that creates an experience for them. And I think those unique experience, kind of like Eric's doing with his hotel in Kentucky, I think that's where the industry is going. Probably in the near future, You'll see so many properties on the market that on Airbnb, VRBO, direct booking, whatever, that are cookie cutter style homes, just your regular, like my area. We got a lot of cabins in North Georgia. There's a lot of cabins out there with other guys and gals too. And they're just throwing a bear head on the wall and trying to make money. The people that are creating unique experiences are the ones that are going to crush the competition. And they're the ones that's going to make all the money. So I do see that people want interesting experiences. And I do see that people want to share that experience with a loved one. And it's going to continue on for as long as we live, in my opinion. That's just my two cents.
What do you all think about, you know, last economy specific question, but whether we're if we're going into stagflation, recession, and will that affect travel? And if so, then, you know, how would you account for that or hedge against that?
I actually want to hear Eric's opinion on this. If he's still around.
Mute button's still on if you're talking.
Oh, well. Well, what do you guys think? I think that we could have here's the thing. It's going to go one of two ways. We're either going to have stagflation, and we're already seeing a lot of unemployment. The worst case scenario is we're seeing a lot of unemployment. Companies are letting people go. But what I'm seeing right now is more in the tech industry. You do see a little bit of real estate slowing down. I think the Fed is going to continue to push interest rates up higher and higher and higher until they get to that sub 2.4% inflation. Once they get into there, they'll peel back rates. And I'm predicting that it'll be somewhere in beginning to end of Q3 next year. And by peeling back rates, it doesn't mean that we're going to go all the way back to 3% and 4%. It means that we will probably peel back, in my opinion, upwards to 1.25%. So let's just say we go up another point between now and next spring. Well, basically where we're at right now, this is the new norm. And so call that high sixes, possibly low sevens. This is the new norm for first-time home buyers. So whatever these interest rates are now, in my opinion, for investors is where we're going to be from here on out for the near future. Temporary pause in the market between now and next spring, but it's still a good time to buy. We're in a good spot. So to go back to this question with stagflation, if the Fed keeps on pushing and do all this quantitative tightening and shrinks the economy down, of course, companies are going to lay people off. Companies are going to shrink. People are going to be laid off. We're going to have stagflation possibly if they push too hard and they don't land the plane slowly and softly. We could see that. That's one way. The other way is shit. I mean, seems like everywhere I go, it seems like everybody's spending money. There's no shortage of spending. I mean, I know some people, what you'll see is it's very unfortunate, but the poverty is really the people that are really getting affected for the most part are people in corporate America within the tech industry right now. But it's really mainly the poor class and the lower income class, say $50,000, $60,000, or let's just say $50,000 or less. Those are the people that are really getting affected. And just like my brother-in-law, he worked for Walmart.com in one of the production facilities, and they laid him off. They laid off like 1,500 people here in Atlanta, and he was one of them. And now he had to go get a job and made $10 less an hour. And that hurts for him and my sister-in-law. So with that said, we could see that happen, and I don't mean that he's a poor person by any means. I'm just saying you could see that happening in that income class, $50,000, $60,000 or less. I don't know what he made or didn't make. I'm just using that for an example purposes. But I think that could be an effect. So that's one way that we'll see it. Worst case scenario or best case scenario, I think, and I'll summarize finish up so somebody else can say something else and respond. But I think at the end of the day, the other scenario is, like I said, everybody's spending money. It could just be a temporary pause in the market where there's been so much printing of money and there's been so much equity built up in real estate. If people, you know, there's a lot of people that think there's going to be a lot of good deals. There could be, a lot less deals than we think. And it really isn't going to affect our market like experts are saying. We're all a product, a byproduct of the past. And we've all gone through one to three or four recessions over our lifetimes. And the one that we remember the most is 2008. And we're nothing anywhere like this in 2008. We're nowhere near that. So I think it's going to be one of two things. It's going to be, I wouldn't say it's going to be bad, but I think a lot of people will lose jobs and some people may slow down in spending next year, for which would affect us in the travel industry. But at the same time, it could just be a blip right now and then it fill back rates and then everything gives back to our new norm, if that makes sense. So that's my two cents.
So I still see that that you know, I know luxury is the first item that goes off most people, especially recession or downturns. But I mean, let's go back to the 80s and let's go back to National Lampoon and, you know, and the Goonie Goonie Mobile. And I mean, travel, I still think, is a top number one thing that people still will bite, scrape tooth and nail. And they just don't want an accommodation. They want to be delivered an experience. And so lately I've been telling people, I'm like, you know, I see the big difference. Yeah, there's a lot of permutation in IKEA cookie cutter accommodations, but, you know, there needs to be more of the experience and people are still willing to spend the money. And I mean, I'm still amazed how well we've done it when you look at the global occupancy of travel. During COVID, it's been nil to up to, I think, 35% is the maximum. So China stopped coming a long time ago. The Europeans aren't coming, you know, so I think it's all in understanding the asset that you buy, you know, having multiple points. Hey, you know, this can play as a great short-term rental because it's got these avenues to it, you know, but I don't see the economy. I mean, we're still being supported since COVID with people that are predominantly only 258 miles away from us. All our business has been regional. I would say international has been less than 2%. And outside regional, more than 250 miles away has been still, you know, probably somewhere around 15%.
Yeah, I mean, for those of us that have been, you know, doing this pre-COVID, post-COVID, and, you know, I think it's a little bit of a double hit what we've experienced over the last, you know, 3 to 4 months with dips in occupancy. You know, the reality is we were, you know, during COVID, enjoying 20 to 30% higher than historical, not only the occupancies, but the rates. And so now that we're seeing a dip in that, obviously, because of the inflation, you know, I think it's just a reality check. I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to lower your prices. Like Robert mentioned, you've got to, you know, increase your hospitality and make sure that you're on point. The guests that are traveling are looking for making sure that, you know, they're going to be budget conscious. And so, you know, I really see that not going away anytime soon. You know, everything that I'm seeing from the economists is that we're looking at a similar situation through the rest of 2023 and potentially into the first quarter of 24. And so for us, I mean, it just means you have to pivot and do some of the things that we've talked about before. You know, there's other avenues of potentially looking at some longer term or, you know, short midterm, as they refer to them, 30, 60 day rentals, you know, to kind of weather the storm. But at the end of the day, I think it's, you know, still, we just have to do a reality check to ourselves. I mean, what we experienced during COVID, that's not going to keep happening, right? So we just have to do a reality check on that.
All right. Thanks, Rich. I'm going to pivot here and pick things up a little bit with more of kind of a, we'll call it a rapid fire round. A couple questions if you just want to go around the panel. First one is, what would you do differently if you were starting today?
I want to spend more time, energy, and efforts on operations. I'm going backwards now, and I brought a physics of engineer into my business, and Brandon knows him, and he's brilliant. But I was at one point at 75 properties by myself without any VAs and trying to manage it all myself and taking on the whole entire world, and I should have learned earlier to delegate people to make myself replaceable.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and also have a more dedicated focus on everything that you do to, you know, be looking at creating that 5-star review. So make no mistake about it, guys, this business is all about hospitality. And so that's really got to be the top priority, you know, when you set this up in the beginning.
What was the question again, Jonathan? I think I got an answer, but I want to make sure I heard it right.
Yeah. What would you do differently if you were starting today?
I would buy as much as I can afford, as many deals as I could. If I was starting today, no, I agree with both Rich and Robert. I would actually get my systems and logistics in place, you know, correctly first, and then scale slower than I did. You know, we had a few properties right out the gates for several years without trying to grow, and then we scaled really, really rapidly over the last 2 years, and it's been good for us. At the same time, we had a lot of headaches along the way. I would have got my operations down right, just like they said.
All right. What do you like most about the STR business?
Okay, I'll say. So I merged my profit, my profitable business flipping, in with rentals. I owned a lot of long term rentals at one point and was flipping a lot of homes. So what I did was I merged the two together. So now I never really made this public, but I have an STR flipping business. I've got 20 properties on inventory, and I never want to have more personally than 20 properties. But what I'm doing is, this is the part that I've made publicly, is we're taking our lower income producing properties and doing flips on them, forced appreciation with a burst strategy. And we're selling them and taking that extracted equity and putting it into larger income producing properties. So right now I'm not worried about net worth. I'm not worried about anything but income and appreciation. And we're flipping homes right now that are operating, and we're making them more money than I've ever made in my life, income wise, for capital and profit. So we're flipping properties right now, making several hundred thousand dollars on each, and we're scaling it to seven figures a year just in flip and deferred gains, and while up leveling our portfolio. So I don't know if that answered the question, but that's what I'm excited about. We're doing bigger, better things, and I merged what I love about all industries with short-term rentals with long-term rentals and flipping into the short-term rental business, just enjoying life in the process. That's my response.
Yeah, I would say I love the diversification. And, you know, I touched on this a little earlier. I mean, we've got, you know, 30-unit buildings in Midtown Atlanta that's walkable, the Ponce City Market, the Piedmont Park, the Beltline, all one-bedroom, two-bedroom units. We've got properties up in the North Mountains like Brandon does in Blue Ridge. We've got properties on Lake Lanier, kind of luxury. We're looking at properties in the Caribbean. We've got a two-bedroom condo in Montego Bay. So I love the diversification. And then we've got properties in single-family homes in the middle of Tampa, and as well as in the northern suburbs of Georgia. And so, you know, I think the more diverse that you can create your portfolio, it allows you to be a little bit more agile and be able to pivot when, you know, a lot of these things occur that we're talking about with risks in the marketplace.
All right, Robert.
If I'm correct, the question was, what do I like about this industry?
Yeah, what do you like most? Or, yeah.
Well, Brandon's heard it before, but I have a deep-seated secret of traveling and self-teaching my children. I'm 41 and about to have my first child. I love traveling. I love being able to write off the fact that I can go to places, stay at homes, and, you know, go eat the local food and, you know, explore the local experiences. And then I'll transfer it back to my clients. I grew up a VRBO kid. I have a magical VRBO story. My father closed a huge deal and took the whole family in for life. Even my niece, 20 years now later, you know, my nieces and nephews still say, "Papa, when can we go do this again?" And so this is what I'm talking about. People will spend hand over fist all their money to have a once in a lifetime experience. And so I do it because I want to do nothing more than what I see Brandon do with his kids, driving around hunting houses with his wife and you know, his girls in the car, and they're just driving addresses. And I think that the true success to this is finding the deal at the entrance and getting the best deal possible. Owner finance, sub two, you know, finding again, wholesaling and just buying those deals and using other companies to turn around and take the leases. Imagine arbitraging your own properties, you know, for bank purposes, you know, and then giving them to a management company. And then the management company actually turns them over to, you know, a marketing and advertising company. So we love the verticals. You own the cleaning companies, you own the pest control, you own the landscaping, you get deep into this. There's such a huge upside down funnel of the amount of money you can make. That's what I love about it. The verticals, all backed by a capital class A asset. You know, if anything fails at the end of the day, we just pack up and we just sell everything. And I know I'm going to have something at the end of the day.
Perfect. Well, I'll ask another rapid fire, which is basically the inverse of that question is, you know, what do you see as the biggest risk in the STR business?
Brandon, you want to start?
Yeah, we can start, or I can start. The biggest risk is not being educated. I know for a fact, just owning a brokerage in North Georgia, many people come out here and are buying and don't know anything about regulation. And in my area, city of LJ prohibits short-term rentals inside city limits. The same thing with Blue Ridge. There's certain things that you got to get through to get licensed in Blue Ridge and downtown. But and it's like this all over the country. People are buying in areas and not researching. And here's what happens. I've got a story of somebody, I won't go into it fully, but real quick, in 30 seconds or less, I know somebody that bought a property because they were in the short-term rental craze. It was sexy. They want a lifestyle asset. Everybody's making money. And they had a really bad realtor and they got them into a property that they thought they could rent in a short-term rental approved city, but come to find out in city limits, they were not allowed to, and the realtor told them that they could. There's possibly a lawsuit there, but at the end of the day, they got shut down. The city was pushing them to shut it down. Now they have a really expensive house that they can't sell to a owner-occupant because they bought it overpriced, and they got a property that they have to rent out for, you know, $1,000 less than the mortgage payment. So what do? They're in a really, really bad deal, and it's because they weren't educated themselves. So a lot of people will not educate themselves and take the advice of a realtor. And honestly, some of those realtors might be wrong. You always need to run. I guess where I'm going at with this is you always need to get your own education and try to learn and understand the markets and the areas before you commit to something on contract and buy, regardless, based on a realtor. And I own a brokerage, and I'm saying this. I mean, this is crazy, but just, you know, I hate to be like this, but some people are just ignorant, you know, and they'll just take the advice of just anybody that says they can make money. And that's not what you should do. You should try to, you know, you should really watch yourself and safeguard yourself and your risk.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I'm going to echo what Brandon's saying regarding the regulatory environment. I mean, that's really the biggest risk that is out there. I mean, I'm literally fighting for about 30 properties right now in the city of Atlanta, simply for grandfathering rights. And unfortunately, all the major cities in the United States have adopted this primary resident, non-investor friendly legislation, which basically requires you to have a primary residence in the property. I don't live in the city of Atlanta, but I've got 32 properties there. And so Airbnb, unfortunately, views this as a win, because the typical starting point when it comes to the regulatory conversation is they want to outright ban short-term rentals. And so Airbnb pushes this legislation that says, you know, we started this company off of the home sharing concept, and we want to be able to have people that supplement their income. And so they push this similar language in all the major cities. I mean, it's not only Atlanta. It's New York, Seattle, Chicago, San Francisco, you know, that have adopted this this exact same format. And so obviously, as you're starting to invest and looking at these different areas to invest in, that's the very first thing you want to make sure that you do your proper research. I mean, I strongly believe in picking up the phone, calling that city, calling that county, and asking them, look at their website and see what the short-term rental rules are. In a lot of cases, in some cases, it's not all negative. There are counties out there, like the county that I'm in on Lake Lanier, allows short-term rentals. We're on the east side of the lake in North Georgia. The west side of the lake is Forsyth County, which basically they've pretty much banned it by saying you can only do it on agriculturally zoned land. So you just have to be very knowledgeable of what the legislative activity is. What's going on in Atlanta now could be seen as an opportunity. right? So there's a lot of outlying counties and cities around the city limits of Atlanta that you don't have that restriction. And so maybe that's somewhere to go look at as a possible investment. So you just got to make sure that you're knowledgeable of what you're doing. I want to give a quick plug to a national association that most of us are members of. It's called VRMA, the Vacation Rental Management Association. They have a pretty robust advocacy program that has a database of what's going on in local cities and counties. Still do your own due diligence, but it's a good resource. They have also done a good job in supporting our fight in Atlanta and provided us with grant money to do an economic impact study to kind of help, you know, fight for the short-term rental space. So, you know, check that out. If you guys are wanting to invest in short-term rentals, it's a good association to become a member of.
Thanks, Rich. Robert, I don't know if you have anything to add, or if not, we can move on.
I mean, yes, certainly due diligence is the most important thing. You know, again, even to the point of, you know, if things fail, are you even looking at the long-term rental? I mean, I've seen so many people purchase houses that the long-term rental didn't even quantify. And I'm like, how, you know, what's your fallback plan? And I mean, everybody likes to say, oh, I'll sell the property, but what if nobody's buying? Then you just got to drop it down drastically. So we are a firm fan. We have a saying, it's called, just because it can be an Airbnb doesn't mean it should be.
Thanks for that. I'm looking at some of the chat questions here. I know we've got six minutes left before we go just
to rental market. You may have lost me for a second there.
Was that Rich?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a couple questions in the chat, Brandon. I'm seeing coming up here, and some of these are synergistic with some of the questions we had already. So if you all are good with it, we can start working through some of these questions. Just kind of in reverse order, there's a question around, do you need to build a team in order to do an STR? Is this something you can do by yourself or with a partnership? You know, one of the questions we had, we thought, you know, a lot of early stage investors ask is, should we be hands-off or hands-on on the management? So kind of wrapping up that question is, hands-on, hands-off, is it something you could do on your own, is the first part, and the second will be, should that be something that you do on your own?
I think the technology that's available now currently, you know, even you know, some of the technology we put in place recently, we asked them specifically, like, hey, who do you cater to? Because we do events. And so, you know, some of those PMSs are as good at, you know, at a monthly rate of like $60 for one listing. And it allows you to do so much. So I think, you know, especially knowing I managed up to 75 myself, and I was running certainly 80 to 100 hours a week easily. But, you know, certainly one individual can. The question is, you know, what is their time worth? It's time or money. It's the equation. You either invest the time and save money, or you know, spend the money and save time.
Yeah, I mean, I adopted very early when we first started this with one and two listings, with the thought process to build it to be scalable and allow my wife and I to be able to travel and work remotely and not be bogged down. And so certainly I would recommend the first couple of listings, definitely handle it yourself, learn the way that you want to, you know, set things up, but very quickly start to delegate. You know, most of this work can be delegated for what's involved in this business. And so, you know, the challenge is when you grow from like three or four properties up to 10 or 15, there's that in-between period where it's not cost effective to kind of have dedicated resources, whether it's a VA or someone else that's helping you. So that's a little bit of challenging in that growth spurt. But once you exceed 15, 20, 30 properties, it's a lot easier to be able to maintain the cost that's involved to have, you know, back office folks to kind of help you with most of the work that's involved with this.
So it sounds like what you all are saying, you know, just to answer this person's question, I think it was Morgan, is, you know, there's technology out there. If you're getting your first one, or even if you're in your first five properties, you all tend to do it on your own using technology and platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah. there's a question. I think one of the first ones was, you know, are there best areas to market in? They had just Facebook user. I've been researching the market. Someone specifically asked about, Eric, what city in the Bourbon Trail do you believe is the best to invest in? I've been researching the market in Bardstown. It's the bourbon capital, but I can see how Lawrenceburg and Versailles would be a great area for low competition. Also, what type of properties would do the best there?
Yeah, Eric is gone, so I highlighted the question for us.
I see that.
I've got two friends out there. I'll answer on their behalf. So he's got this hotel in Versailles. I think that's how you say it. And I've got another friend that is got a lodge motel, 158 unit lodge motel, who is building one, redeveloping it in Bardstown. So I don't know if those are the best areas, but I guess I'll step in for Eric. He's got one in Versailles, and you know, I know of another guy doing one in Bardstown. So good luck, whoever asked that.
Another one's probably better, and kind of a question was, best area, or what area of the country is your best performing asset for STR?
So this person's asking which area in the country is our own individual best performing asset. Mine, believe it or not, mine is in, this sounds terrible because I own a brokerage in Northern Georgia, but my best performing asset is in South Carolina. It's truth.
North Dallas, Plano area. We're doing about 25 to 30% cash on cash fairly easily. Luxury pool properties and good neighborhoods that are around $500,000.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Lake Lanier, I'm basically doing a rehab right now that was an $800,000 purchase, 160 rehab. It's going to be a $1.5 million ARV, and we're going to do about $25,000 a month. So, you know, it's north of 20% return on investment on an annualized basis. So,
sure. All right. So, Morgan Henry, how do you underwrite for STR? What are some of the tools you can use to determine numbers on a property? And are there any rules of thumb to take into consideration?
I think it's all about the cash on cash return on investment. You go ahead, Robert.
No, go ahead. You're already there.
Sure. So I think in my opinion, how I underwrite is, you know, I look at AirDNA, first of all. That's the data source I use. Been using STR Insights. I'm not 100% sold on it, to be honest with you, but that helps me find the right location if I want to get into a new area and exactly where the property is located in that area. The properties that are in the 95th percentile in that area, in that city that I'm researching that's new. But then I look at AirDNA and then I take about 10% off of the income. So if AirDNA is spitting out $100,000 a year, I'm putting $90,000 in my spreadsheet. And then I am trying to utilize my cash on cash return on investment calculation to determine if it's a good asset to be purchased on my portfolio. And if I can clear 30, 40% plus COC ROI, I'm happy. Now interest rates are a little bit higher. So 20% plus is probably okay for the time being. And you know, if I buy something that makes 20% plus right now, I can always refinance it later if the interest rate's lower, and we all know that they will eventually. But yeah, AirDNA, STR Insights, 20% plus COC ROI right now. And that's kind of how I evaluate my properties.
Yeah, we use all those similar tools as well. I'm actually working with one of the founders of Standard & Poor's Real Estate Index to look at building a short-term rental index. And so that's one of the tools that I'm going to be rolling out soon.
I'd love to hear more about that, Rich. We're AirDNA, you know, DataRabu. I like DataRabu because it's kind of that below AirDNA above your long-term rentals. You know, so looking at multiple points, you know, of data and market intelligence and seeing what they all say to make, you know, a little bit more clearer picture. I agree with you, Brandon. STR Insights, I love. They're more of a hot zoner for us. So we can actually go in and target. There's another one called Rentals, R-E-N-T-E-A-L-Z-Z-Z. I like it because it'll actually, that's more if you're going to go out and start targeting. Once you find the zones, start targeting properties to go acquire, and, you know, and gives you the owner's names and everything else. But looking at a lot of the data, AirDNA for us, easy. Depending upon the property that you're looking to purchase, if, let's say you're doing a $500,000 house, AirDNA needs to come, you know, somewhere at least 80 to 100,000 or within a 3 to 5 time, you know, a range of a purchase price. So the ADR, I'm sorry, the annual revenue needs to fall somewhere around 3 to 5X into the purchase price. So if it falls below that, those are easy numbers for us to tell us that it's probably not worthwhile, you know, and don't go too high in ADR because we personally, in occupancy, because we personally find that, you know, you get above 75, 80, the amount of wear and tear that is incurred in order to close those dates out, just don't make it worthwhile. It's not a promising business. So it's more of a, in our opinion, it's more of a losing business.
Thanks. Good insights there. Another question. This is from this Facebook user. How do you consider investing in a city you don't live near? That is one of my concerns. I need to get out of the mindset of needing to have my properties within reach.
Back to building the team from the beginning and get comfortable delegating responsibility. You know, we've been in Tampa for 2 years now, and we've had at its peak, we probably had 20. And, you know, it's because we were able to set up a good cleaning operation team and maintenance team in the beginning that are still with us. They're not our employees, but they are separate contractors. However, you know, they saw the opportunity to grow with us. And, you know, we represent probably 70 to 80% of their revenue. And so they're more like a strategic partner. And so, you know, it's very rare that I even have a need to go visit Tampa. I like visiting Tampa, but it's not to check on our properties or the operation because it's pretty much running on autopilot.
So, yeah, I would agree. Good operations, good standard operating procedures with good, you know, KPIs to be able to measure them against, you know, using things like a breezeway, you know, for your cleaning. So that way, even if you're not there, you're getting really good detailed reports. So you should be able to jump in and see everything that's going on transparently at any point in time. You know, you as a management company, we want our owners to feel that way. Like, certainly they can call us every day and ask what's going on and we'll give them the update. But, you know, we provided them a system, a back office engine that they can go in and see even the conversations and the complaints, not just over Airbnb, but when the guests call us and everything else and how we're handling it, who's being orchestrated through. So, you know, good technology to monitor, to give yourself, you know, relationships are great, but people are people. And, you know, I would have to say that the most difficult thing of this industry is finding good labor who cares. I mean, you can pay arm and leg for it, you know, and that works great when you're making the money. But, you know, when you're trying to take and again, you know, watch and monitor every dollar and just get the most out of this, you know, it is, you know, you can pay out the nose for good quality. You can find and develop a good relationship. But boots on the ground is the other aspect too, making sure you're in an area where, you know, there's other hosts who are successful. You can even reach out on Airbnb and VRBO and say, hey, you know, who are you using for a cleaner? You get great reviews. I'd love to see if they could come check out my place, and they're willing to share it, you know, but having a good local infrastructure, boots on the ground.
Yeah. I would add to that and just say, I would rather have properties not within reach because if they're within reach, I mean, I'm going to be a little OCD and I'm going to be right on top of it. I'm going to be looking at the property more and more. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen my South Carolina property in over a year. I finally went over there the last 3 days. And it's just fine. I mean, obviously, anytime anything can happen on any of your properties, whether it's close by or it's far away, I see the further away the property is, the less involved I am, and it makes my life less stressful. So take that for what it's worth to you, whoever asked that question.
All right. Here's another one. What do you think of a multifamily 3-4plex STR? I'm considering one with 3 different themes and experiences. Seems kind of fun.
the multifamilies are absolutely epic if you do them right. We had an eightplex that we managed to, we gutted two, actually it was in third ward of Houston, two crack houses. We completely gutted them in the beginning before Google updated it. Guests would actually look at the address on Google and be like, is this actually the building? So, but we had two buildings that had four units in each. They were two bedroom, one bath. And we actually found it, you know, we managed it for 2.5 years before the owner sold it. We had more difficulty trying to rent out the individual ones. And where we succeeded and we killed it was just renting out the four and the eight. And the eight, we were doing $5,000 to $6,000 weekends for the all eight units, sleeping up to 30 people. And that's kind of where you get your versatility. It's a step below a hotel. It's a mini hotel or a boutique hotel. You know, we had digital concierge screens in every single one of the units, you know, and again, it was downtown. So we had a private concierge service, but, you know, there's a lot of, again, versatility in that, whether, you know, you're doing just one unit, one through eight, or whether you're doing two units and you just choose any, or then you do four and, or you do eight. And again, especially those bigger ones right now, some of the biggest travel, if you can capture it, is multi-business and multi-generational, you know, and this is where the families go and get to enjoy themselves on one ground with a large common space area. But at the end of the night, they get to retire back to their own space. A lot of businesses are doing that right now. More and more businesses, you know, are enjoying, especially on longer stays, not a hotel, but, you know, the accommodations, because especially the food factor, you know, the cost of food is a lot more outrageous, especially right now, you know, and they're finding that they're able to save costs by giving their employees the option to stay in a little mini kitchenette or a kitchen, you know, they're stood, but they still have all at one space. Hey, there's eight condos and there's a common area and they can all get together and meet up and we can have chats. But then, you know, we had a law firm stay there for actually about 3 weeks. And they were, it was about almost $20,000 booking, you know, for just four units. So it was amazing.
Yeah, we have a quadplex, one of our properties in Atlanta, that's a few blocks from Piedmont Park and Peachtree Street. They're all one bedroom units. And my wife handles all of our staging and design, and she definitely hates kind of the cookie cutter approach where everything's, you know, basically you're going to be a hotel. So each unit has its own little style and slight different touch to it on purpose. And so we didn't kind of go crazy as the question is asking about themes or experiences. It's just each unit is unique, got a unique style and set up in the beginning. And those do quite well. It's you could basically, there's a Fox Theater that has a lot of venues that come into town. You can walk to that and go to restaurants and stuff and come back. And it's walkable to a lot of different things in Atlanta. So it does well.
Yeah. So I don't have any multifamily. I almost bought a hotel about 2 years ago. But what I do have is a property and an ADU. And I view that as multifamily almost. It's not multifamily classification, but it gives me the listing capability to do the ABC model, which is rent one of those properties out by themselves each. So you get the main property, the main dwelling, and you have the accessory dwelling unit, or you can rent the whole both of the properties as an entire property and as one. So I have three different options there. And I have a couple of different properties like this. And what I see is that there's more money to be made if you have multiple options on one under one roof or one piece of land. And I think that's that. So anyways, take that for what it's worth to you. I think that's a multifamily three or four plex should do really, really well for you.
Seeing, I think we have a few more people dropping off here.
Do one more question, unless
I've got one more question. This one's for me. So, and hopefully it's on behalf of a couple people that are looking at, you know, let's say scaling their business, right? Maybe they have one or two STRs. What would you all recommend to someone, you know, scaling up now, early stages, maybe just one or two, right? Trying to grow to 5 units, 10 units. Maybe some strategies you've used to do that. And Brandon, I kind of know your answer, but you can say it for the audience here.
Yeah. Let's let Rich go first.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I touched a little bit on this earlier, you know, as you're doing 1, 2, 3, and 4, you really should be thinking about what your end game is. You know, do you want to grow to 20 or 30 or 40 and kind of build your infrastructure in the beginning around that end game? You know, there's a lot of different you know, platforms and technology that can help. We've already talked about a couple. You know, obviously there's price optimization tools, there's channel managers, there's Breezeway and ones that help you with the back office. You know, but I would say that there are some options as well that fit nicely with going from one or two properties up to 20 to kind of help you along the way. There's some channel managers that actually provide guest communication services as a part of being a part of the channel manager. You know, there's a lot of good ones out there today, but back when we were starting, there weren't that many options. So we've been with Guesty from the beginning. And so there are multiple ones that do this, but you can basically use their call center to do most of your guest communications. If you only have one or two units, I think you can do it now with one or two units. Back then you have to have at least five, but it's a good way to have a stepping stone that allows you to, you know, not get bogged down. When you start getting to five and six and seven units, you can spend a lot of time on guest communications, even though a lot of it can be automated with the channel manager. And so I would look at some options that way that allow you to grow, because then, you know, once you get to 15, 20, you want to build your own VA team. You can kind of wean yourself away from that as you grow.
Yeah. Yeah. So starting and scaling, it's all about how much, in my opinion, I agree. You need to integrate your technology and make sure that the operations run smoothly right out the gates and continue to work on it, tweaking that business. But at the same time, a lot of people are limited by capital. So if you want to start and scale, there's multiple things you can do. You can do property management, co-host if you're limited by money. Some people choose to do arbitrage. I don't do that. But we are getting into property management now, because here's why. I've got limited resources of money. I can't buy anymore unless I sell something, and I continue to want to scale. I'm only 40 years old. I'm going to probably give this another five more years to make some really good money, and then I want to peel back from active business. Hopefully my tribe, my team can run things. But at the end of the day, I think for me, I look at all opportunities to bring in revenue. I'm trying to buy properties. So I have to sell some first to buy another one. And or if it's you, Jonathan, I don't know what your resources are for capital, but let's just say you can only afford one property that you have now. Write it out. And I'm going to give you guys all a nugget here. This is something I've never told anybody. I think you might know this, Jonathan. All my properties are up for sale. They've always been up for sale. They always will be for sale. I can be bought. My properties, if somebody will give me my price, whatever that price is, and it doesn't matter about an economy, I'm going to sell it because I want to extract the money that I want to make out of it to go buy more properties, trade the lower income producer in for a higher income producer. And in the meantime, if I can't buy and sell a property, then I will go in and start scaling by doing property management. I don't want to co-host because there's so much stuff that goes on in short-term rental world that I don't want the owner to see, because it will make them stressful. They'll be stressed, and then they'll get stressed out, want to go to town on me and my team, and that ain't going to happen. So we're going to be doing property management. We're taking on five properties now. These properties for us are going to be very, very profitable. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of rambling on here, but at the end of the day, all the properties are for sale. That nugget I was telling you, we're selling property right now that I list extremely high. All my properties, I always list extremely high. There are some, I hate to be like this, don't get mad at me, guys, but there are some ignorant people out there buying short-term rentals that have bad advice from realtors. I've already said it. And if somebody that I'm not representing wants to buy my property at some ungodly price, I personally don't care if they're profitable or not. I mean, I hate it for them if they're not. I would never sell my property to somebody directly that I think is an outrageous price. But if somebody comes off the street, my representation from other people, and want to buy my property, I'll sell it. So put an ungodly price right off the bat after you buy it. Put it on the damn market and see if somebody will buy it. Short-term rental is the craze, and it's going to continue to be the craze for the next several years. We all know it. So put all your properties up for sale and wait patiently, be patient, patiently aggressive. I'll wrap up with this. I just contracted a property that should only be at $600,000, but I got $650,000 on it, and I owe $300,000 on it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, people are out there and they want to buy. And just this last week, half a point reduction in interest rates, it made people come out the woodworks to start contracting property. And that's what happened. So I'm just patiently aggressive. I'm waiting for somebody to pay me my price. And when I get it, I move on to the next asset. And that'll allow me to get more money extracted to buy one or two more or better properties. The whole goal is to never have more than 20 personally owned. And eventually I want to descale that back to 10 properties that are extremely profitable, pulling in 150 grand or more a year net. So that's kind of how I'm scaling. I don't know if that answers your question, but you know,
yeah.
Oh, well, okay.
Definitely appreciate both of you. Brandon, if you want to wrap it up, I think we've had most people.
Yeah. I'd like to see if, I think I saw Rich about to say something. I'd like to see if he had anything to,
no, I just want to add to that. Yeah. I just want to add strategically, you know, since we do all three, you know, we buy, we do acquisitions for our short-term rentals. We manage for others. I don't really do the co-hosting thing, but we do manage properties for clients and investors. And you know, the rental arbitrage master lease strategy, we haven't really spoke about it, but that's really what helped us grow quickly in the beginning. And it allows you to build your infrastructure as you're starting. We went from, you know, one or two units to 15 in like 6 months by doing rental arbitrage. And so for those of you that aren't that familiar with rental arbitrage, you know, you're basically doing a lease with the owner, whether it's you know, one or two bedroom unit, or it could be a four or five bedroom house, and you're doing a longer term lease owner that you are doing, I like to use the word or the terminology, corporate housing, to be able to host guests that are coming in. You're not the one staying in the property, but essentially it allows you to very quickly duplicate that, especially when you're dealing with owners that have multiple properties. Because what happens, we did an 8-unit building in Virginia Highlands, for example, one of our first units, and we went from doing 1 unit to 4 units over 3 or 4 months because the owner saw the benefit in us not reaching out to them when the toilet clogs or the AC goes out. We're going to handle a lot of those maintenance issues. Properties stay in much better shape. All the things we spoke about earlier, the landlord owners see that benefit. And so I'm going to pay them the market rent just like a regular tenant would. And they're very quickly going to be like, well, hey, Rich, you know, we've got another long-term tenant that's been a pain in my side. Their lease expires in a month. You want to take a look at that one too? Sure. Yeah. Let's add that one in. And so even like through COVID, we grew in a 27 unit building from starting with 4 units to 27 units in the span of a year. And so it's a very quick way to scale your business. It goes back to what Brandon said earlier about diversifying your income. The way I look at it is, you know, you don't own the property, but you're buying a net cash flow. It may take you, you know, 7-8 grand to set up a 1 or 2 bedroom, but that thing's going to net cash flow, if you do it right, between 1500 to 2000 a month for that one unit. So multiply that times 10, you know, so that it can help you with your growth and allow you to kind of be scalable at the same time and have some diversification.
That's a great point. Thanks for that.
Agreed. Well, guys, thank you. So just FYI, everybody wondering why everybody jumped off. I gave all the guest speakers freedom to jump off when they got to, because it's evening time in most of our places on the planet. And anyways, with that said, I do want to say thank you to all of you guys who spoke. Thank you guys for hanging in there with us for this not so user-friendly software where I was having hiccups. But I do want to say this, look guys, I think it's all mutually across the board that we all agree that there is some wealth building that you can still create in the next few years, in the next year, next 2 years. You got to buy right, you got to have your systems right, and you need cash flow, which is most important. At the end of the day, all of us are going to continue to move forward and to scale. And we're not going to give up, and we're going to keep on moving forward so that we create more financial freedom in 2023 and beyond. And if that's something that you guys want to do, you know, if you're in Georgia, Rich is spearheading Stroaga, or maybe I'm saying that wrong. We've got, Hampshire. Yeah, Hampshire. Yeah, sorry. Amstra. I'm so, I, sorry. Anyways, yeah. Anyways,
Scroaga is the statewide one that I used to be a board member of as well, but Amstra is the one for Atlanta.
Amstra. Yeah. Got it. So with that said, you guys just follow Rich, follow Jonathan if you want, follow Eric, follow Robert, make connections in the Facebook group. All of us are in the Facebook group. We're here to help. We're here to serve. And that's why we're doing this. So greatly appreciate you guys for coming on here tonight. And for those of you that are going to watch later, that's it. Hope this helped.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Brandon. Jonathan, it was great meeting you.